Welcome, my ghoulish friends, curious wanderers, and brave-hearted listeners, to another tale from the darkest side of the street lamp. You found yourself in the right place, or the wrong one, depending how you feel about creaking floorboards, hungry whispers, and houses that should have been left alone. Tonight's tale is not for little ears. See, if you're young of age or young of heart, you may not want to tuck yourself in elsewhere. This story carries sharp teeth and long shadows. What I have for you is a slow descent, a transformation story, if you will. One boy, one forgotten house at the end of the road. One piece of paper that should never have been touched. This tale unspools like ink on wet parchment, deliberate, dripping, and oh so eager to be read. So, close your eyes, unless you're not ready to see, and listen carefully. Because in the world of this story, the paper reads you back. I also want to take this opportunity to say a huge thank you to my latest Earl Grey enforcer, Rhonda Ray. An absolute pleasure to have you. I raise my giant mug of Earl Grey tea in your honour. Please, everyone, welcome Rhonda to the fold. I am so lucky to have you and all of my Patreon supporters. You also might notice that I'm a little bit standing under the weather. Well, that's because I am. I know, I've been sick, twice in a month. It's so awful. I came back from Singapore, my little lady, my wife, got sick, and then I got sick, and I've been spending the past 5 days recovering, and just in time to share a story with you. But look, the silver lining here, legends, is that I think that it only lends itself to the story. So I won't have an outro today to rest my voice, but I just want to say thank you so much to my majestic Ode Night Tea Titan, Matto Star. Unbelievable kindness and an unbelievable friend. Literally endless support. This podcast would not be the same without your support, buddy. Literal God tier support and a wonderful human being. And speaking of wonderful human beings, are my white tier warlords. And that's Lesosaurus Rex, Joseph Schroeder, Maya, and Sangeetha. Absolute legends. And a massive, massive thank you to my Earl Grey enforcers that support me every step of the way. I will be 100% next week, I assure you. I am not going to leave you legends without an episode after just coming back. No way, no chance. Thank you again for your undying patience. I give you now, the ink doesn't dry. Let's begin. The ink doesn't dry. Chapter 1. The House at the End of Cypress Lane. He moved in 3 weeks ago. A boy, 12 years old, quiet even for his age. A little gangly, hair that never sat still and eyes that stayed down. His name is irrelevant now. Time and transformation have eroded its shape. But in those early days, neighbors called him Tommy. His mother said the move was for a fresh start. No one dared to ask from what. Cypress Lane was short, ending in a dead end that pressed against the woods like a secret trying to push itself into the trees. 14 houses lined the road, nearly identical save for the last one. It leaned. The windows blinked like bruised eyes, behind curtains too old to still be fabric. Everyone told Tommy to stay away. The kids said it was haunted. Adults offered vaguer warnings, stories about trespassers who never came home, who walked too far into the dark. One older woman simply said, "The house remembers." But warnings are invitations to children, especially lonely ones. He waited until the sky curdled orange, slipped through the side gate, crunching over gravel and dried weeds. The back door was barely shut, the lock rusted, and swinging like a dead thing in the wind. No alarms, no resistance. Inside, mold, dust, and the scent of something chemical that clawed at the throat. A mattress slumped in one corner. Yellow wallpaper bubbled with moisture and secrets. Tommy's footfalls echoed louder than they should have. The house breathed around him. In the living room, he found it on the floor. Beneath a collapsed end table, a single piece of paper. Uncreased, bright white, unnatural against the filth. Ink moved across it, curling, dancing, writing itself in spirals and stutters and sigils, then vanishing like steam. Different languages. Some he thought he recognized, French, maybe German, but others felt wrong, like they were never meant for tongues or throats. He didn't pick it up at first. He just watched. Then it wrote in English.
"You shouldn't be here."
He stared for a long time. When he blinked, the words were gone, and another sentence had replaced it.
"But you are. You see now."
The ink bled upward as if pulled by gravity, in reverse, and Tommy, trembling, finally reached out. His fingers grazed the corner, and the paper shivered. It sucked a breath from the room. Windows groaned. Somewhere beneath the floorboards, a low, wet snap. Like meat pulling free from bone, echoed once, then was gone. He took it, folded it, tucked it into his pocket like it was his now. That night, when the moon scraped its nails across his window, the paper unfolded itself on his desk. When he tried to crumple it, it only whispered softly, like pages turning under skin. Chapter 2. Beneath the Skin. Tommy doesn't sleep that night. He lies in bed, still dressed, arms pulled tight to his sides, like he's trying not to move, not to breathe, afraid the paper might hear him, or worse, see him. It rests on his desk, blank now, innocent in the dark. But it isn't blank for long. He blinks, and ink slithers out from the center, a spiral again, slow, patient, the way a spider might wrap its prey.
"You will learn to listen."
The sentence appears in red this time. Not ink. Too thick. Too wet. It smells like copper. Tommy stands up. Not because he wants to. He's not sure what want even means anymore. His limbs feel numb, like they've forgotten his name. He reaches for the page. His fingers shake. No, they twitch. Independently, like something's trying to dance just beneath the skin. As he touches it, he winces. There's a faint prick, like a splinter sliding under a fingernail. He pulls his hand away and watches as blood drips onto the corner of the paper. It doesn't stain. It sinks. Drawn in, like it's hungry. The red disappears into the paper, as though being drunk by something ravenous. When it finishes, a new word forms.
Deeper.
He doesn't remember walking out of the room, or finding his shoes, or stepping into the night, but somehow he's at the end of Cypress Lane again, staring at the house. The paper is in his hand, folded once. It's warm. He stands outside for a long time, listening to the groan of the trees. There's no wind, but they move anyway, like they're breathing, like they're watching. A dog barks two streets over. Then it yelps. Then it's silent. Tommy doesn't flinch. The next morning, he is in his bed again. The paper lies beside him. This time, it doesn't wait. As his eyes open, new words are already crawling across its surface, writing like scars stitching themselves closed. Bring one. Feed me. He blinks. A buzzing fills his ears. He thinks about Jake. Jake from school. The only one who talked to him. The only one who offered a seat at lunch. He smiled too much, said things like, cool hoodie, and we should hang after school. Tommy remembers the warmth of that kindness. He also remembers the hunger behind his eyes now. The whisper in the folds of the paper. He doesn't want to, but he's already moving. Chapter 3, The First One. Jake never sees it coming. He greets Tommy at the end of the school day, same as always. Lopsided grin, hoodie half zipped, a bit of chocolate smeared on his sleeve from a rushed lunch. He talks about a new game he's playing, something loud and chaotic. Tommy doesn't hear a word of it. He only hears the paper, tucked in the back pocket of his jeans, thrumming like a second heartbeat. Every step toward the woods behind Cypress Lane is easier than the last. Jake follows. He laughs. He doesn't notice the silence, doesn't question why Tommy's voice is gone. Why the trail they're on isn't a real trail anymore. Just slivers of bare earth between hunched trees and rotting leaves. The sky bleeds orange again. The same light from the first night. It paints Jake's face in fire. He turns.
Dude, where are we even going?
Tommy stares at him unblinking. His nails have grown slightly. He didn't notice until now, but they're darker, splintered. Under one of them, a fine strip of red. The paper unfolds in his hand without being touched. It writes while he watches.
Cut, then give.
Jake never even sees the rock. It's not rage, it's not fear, it's instruction. Tommy's hand moves with mechanical certainty, not fast, not slow, just steady. A single strike. Jake drops. His mouth is open, but no sound comes out. The paper vibrates violently now, almost humming with anticipation. Tommy kneels beside him, pressing the paper to Jake's cheek. The blood wells up. The page drinks. It drinks like it hasn't fed in years. Tommy watches as the blood disappears, sucked into the fibers of the page, until it's snow white again. He turns Jake over. The boy is still breathing, weakly. His mouth forms a word that might be Tommy's name.
Tommy.
There's no accusation in it, only confusion, and then nothing. Tommy digs a shallow grave under the roots of a cypress tree, not out of guilt, out of instinct. As he presses the last bit of earth over Jake's limp fingers, the paper flutters in his pocket. Warm again. So warm. That night, the words come fast. Well done. You are seen. You are worthy. His reflection in the mirror has changed. The eyes are duller, pupils larger, deeper, like they go somewhere else now. The veins in his arms pulse like they're closer to the surface. He smiles, then realizes he doesn't remember how to frown anymore. Chapter 4. The Paper Breathes. Tommy stops attending school. No one checks in. His mother says something vague about homeschooling to the neighbors, those who bother to ask. But there's an odd calm in her face when she speaks, like her eyes have been hollowed out and replaced with still water. She walks more slowly now, smiles less. Her voice echoes like she's talking from somewhere just a little too far away. He watches her from the doorway, paper clutched in his hand, and wonders how much of her is left. Sometimes the words on the page curl upward, spelling nonsense symbols that pulse and fold in on themselves. He stares too long and feels heat behind his eyes. A nosebleed begins without warning. It doesn't stop until the paper touches it. It drinks. Always drinks. The blood vanishes, but something else stays. Tommy dreams of teeth. Rows and rows, spiraling inward. He dreams of wet stone. Corridors that breathe like lungs and whisper in languages not meant for the living. He wakes with dried blood at the corners of his mouth. His skin itches constantly now, not like a rash, deeper, bone deep, like his body is rejecting itself, like it knows something old is moving in. His fingernails are blackened completely, thick, uneven, ridged with unnatural growth. His fingers are longer, at least he thinks they are. The mirror tells the truth, but he no longer trusts it. The paper writes now, without stopping. You are almost ready. You've given, but not enough. More flesh, more thought, more warmth. Tommy leaves the house 3 nights later. His second victim is a man who walks his dog after midnight near the creek. The dog doesn't bark. It simply lowers itself to the ground, trembling as Tommy passes by. The man says something, annoyed, turning to look, and the rock rises again. The blood flows faster this time. The paper is eager. Tommy watches, fascinated, as the blood soaks the page, steaming in the cold air. It sinks in instantly. And this time, the paper moans, a wet, breathy noise, low and soft and human. He doesn't stop. Not when the fingers twitch. Not when the man tries to crawl. The man sees his face, whispers,
"What are you?"
Tommy has no answer. Only the paper pressed against flesh. Only the blood sinking in. Only the hunger spreading. He leaves the body in the creek. Doesn't bury it this time. Doesn't need to. The rules are different now. The next morning there's something under his skin. Something moving, writhing. It doesn't hurt. It just tickles. Chapter 5. Consumption. He doesn't feel hunger anymore. Not the human kind. Food spoils untouched on his nightstand. Cereal left to rot in sour milk. Bread curling at the corners like peeling skin. His stomach no longer growls. His mouth no longer waters. He licks his lips only when blood spatters them. But the other hunger is constant. It lives in him now. It whispers beneath his ribs. It curls in his spine. And the paper guides it.
"They are meat. You are not. Feed what remains of you. The rest belongs to us."
He's not sure who us is. Not anymore. It doesn't matter. His skin has begun to harden in places. It peels off in thin strips behind his knees, under his jaw, where the veins used to pulse visibly. The flesh underneath is darker, greyish, almost rubbery, resistant. The paper doesn't react to it. It only drinks from the spots where his human skin still clings. His third offering is a girl from school, Lena. She had once shared her lunch with him, a sandwich, half eaten, pushed across the table with a shrug. He remembers her voice, small, a little raspy. It cracked when she laughed. He stalks her for 2 days, not because he hesitates, because he savors the idea of it. She goes missing on a Friday. The police canvass Cypress Lane that night. Flashlights sweep through the trees behind the end house. But they never cross the threshold. Not into that house. Not into the place that knows them. Tommy watches them from the window. His teeth are sharper now. When he smiles, they don't all belong to the same mouth. Lena doesn't scream when he drags her inside. She only sobs, muffled, dazed. Something about the house numbs people, softens their senses of danger until it's too late. He doesn't use the rock this time. He uses his hands. The paper moans louder than ever as it soaks up the blood. His handprint, fresh and dripping, presses into the bottom corner. Instead of staining it, the blood is pulled in. And then, for the first time, the paper pulls. The surface ripples, flexes, something presses against it from the other side, a shape almost human. Then a hand, skeletal and long-fingered, pushes outward. The paper stretches like skin over its form before sucking it back in. Tommy gasps. He laughs. He screams. He claws at his own face until his fingers come away slick with skin and blood and something black beneath. It doesn't hurt. It feels like peeling off a mask he didn't know he was wearing. In the mirror, the boy who was Tommy stares back, only briefly. Then something else shifts in behind his eyes, something older. The paper no longer waits to be read. It speaks inside his skull now. Chapter 6. The Blood Root. Tommy doesn't speak anymore. His throat has changed. The cords inside are taut, slick things that hum when he breathes. When he tries to form words, only guttural whispers crawl out, low, grating, not quite human. Like the vocal cords belong to something submerged, something that doesn't understand air. He no longer sleeps. His skin no longer sweats. He molts. Strips of old flesh peel from him nightly, falling in curled, parchment-thin layers that crackle when they hit the floor. Underneath, the new skin is raw, tight, grey-veined. It pulses. Sometimes it twitches on its own, a ripple of muscle that moves without command. His hands are no longer hands, they're tools. Fingers grown too long, tipped with nail-like claws that curve slightly inwards. When he moves them, they click, sharp against one another. Useful, efficient. He hasn't washed in days. The scent of him is thick, fermented like copper and mold, and something deeper, something sweet and spoiled. But the paper loves it. It curls in his palm like a cat when he holds it. It writes on its own now, all the time, never stopping.
You've nearly bloomed. One more. One you know. A friend. A heart. A face you remember.
He thinks of his mother. She hasn't spoken in a week. Sits on the couch all day, watching, static. Eyes glassy, lips moving like she's murmuring prayers. In reverse. She knows. Or maybe she always knew. Tommy walks into the room barefoot, blood already drying on his arms from something he tore apart in the woods that morning. A raccoon, or maybe a fox. It had screamed like a baby, long and high, until he snapped the spine and scooped the steaming insides into the paper's waiting center. His mother doesn't flinch as he approaches, but her fingers curl tight around the edge of the couch. He steps closer. The paper throbs in his hand.
Let us in.
He presses his forehead to hers and begins to push. Not with his hands. With the paper. He unfolds it and holds it flat against her face. She trembles, tries to scream. The paper clings, then sinks. It melts into her skin like boiling oil, searing through dermis and bone. Her eyes go wide. Her veins bulge. She thrashes, arms flailing like an animal caught in a snare. But the paper consumes her, face first. It eats downward. Skin tears open across her jaw, splits like rotten fruit, revealing bone drenched in blood and saliva. Her tongue spasms once, then blackens. She makes a sound, a gurgling, hiccuping cry, and he smiles. The blood erupts from her nose into wet jets splashing his chest. He laughs, loud, joyful, and the paper drinks all of it. When it pulls away, her head is a sunken cavity, collapsed inward, flesh caved like something vacuum-sealed. He kisses her cooling forehead. The transformation is complete now. Something stirs in his abdomen, roots pushing through organs, branching, pulsing. His rib cage aches, and with a sickening crack, two of them snap outward, splitting the skin like ruptured seams. Bones become limbs, mouths open where no mouths should be. He shudders, falling to all fours, convulsing as the final human parts of him burst. The floor is slick with blood, pus, and the paper, now embedded in his chest, pulsing like a second heart. It no longer writes. It only whispers.
Flesh now, all of it. Warm, wet, screaming.
Tommy lifts his head, what's left of it, and sniffs. His tongue lolls out, long blackened, bifurcated. He's not hungry. He's starving. Chapter 7, What Grows in the Quiet. Cypress Lane forgets. It always does. A missing boy, a missing mother, the smell of rot carried by the summer heat, the neighbors glance at the last house on the end now and then, but the longer they look, the more their eyes blur, like trying to stare through heat waves on asphalt. The memories soften. The colors fade. The house leans further, and the door somehow is always ajar. Inside, something new grows. The paper has been absorbed completely now. It lives in Tommy, or what used to be him. His chest is a cavity of soft, glistening tissue, where ink pulses like blood. Words crawl across his insides, visible through thin, translucent flesh. They shift, rearrange, retranslate.
Bring them in. Feed the seed. Let it bloom.
He stalks at night now, but not far. He doesn't need to. The house calls to them. Children who wander, drunks who stumble, lovers who think the end of the road is a quiet place to kiss and touch. They see the house and feel the pull. It's not fear. It's curiosity. Something low and sticky in the gut. Something that whispers, just a peek, just a little closer. He waits inside, body hunched in the rafters, limbs wrapped like a spider resting between feedings, mouths open across his shoulders, clicking, breathing. One boy enters, a runaway, no more than 16. He finds the paper. Of course he does. It's always there for them in the beginning, folded neatly on the floor, pulsing gently, waiting to be touched. He reads. Tommy watches from the dark, twitching with anticipation. The boy bleeds from the nose, just like he did, just like they all do. The transformation has already begun, before the boy even realizes the door won't open anymore. Before the walls begin to hum, before the floor begins to breathe. But Tommy doesn't leap. He descends slowly, crawling along the ceiling, eyes like black pits, leaking ink, tongue unfurling like a wet rope. The boy turns too late. Tommy lands with a crunch, bones cracking like knuckles, teeth burying into the bone's neck with a sound like fabric tearing underwater. The scream never finishes. Blood fills the room like warm rain. Weeks pass, then months. No one speaks of the missing anymore. No one dares, because Cypress Lane is quiet now. The trees don't sway. The birds don't sing. At the dead end, the house waits, and beneath it, in its belly, something has begun to bloom. Roots, wet and vain, spread out under the foundation. They pulse with warmth, feeding on marrow and dreams. And the last twitching pieces of those who wandered too close, the ink runs through them like lifeblood. And inside the roots, there are words. Words in every language, written on walls made of teeth and meat and old newspaper clippings. Names, dates, prayers, screams, and always, always the phrase, it started with the boy, and it will never end. Not as long as the paper breathes, not as long as flesh still walks the world, not as long as there is someone out there just curious enough to knock. For those of you who are still listening, thank you so, so, so much. I hope you loved today's story. I wrote it myself whilst I was sick and just loved the concept of paper consuming people in the most creepy way possible. Also, because I wanted to put that free time down to good use. Have a wonderful, majestic week ahead of yourselves. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Goodness. And don't worry about me. I'm actually on the mend. Like, I'm almost 100%. Just the vocals are catching up. And I can't wait to share more tales with you next week when I'm right as rain. Love you all. Until next we meet.